Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, April 7th, welcome, friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
So have Americans gotten too casual? These days, you can see leggings at lunch, hoodies at work, sneakers at the theater, and maybe even pajamas and sometimes some hair bonnets at the airport. One steakhouse chain has said enough. It wants diners in business casual. And a few days ago, the State Department has said no more casual at work. They have imposed its first codified dress code, formalizing attire for all official State Department settings. And so when you think about it, though, dress codes have never just been about fabric. They can signal respect, aspiration, identity, and sometimes exclusion. There have been whole discrimination lawsuits, okay, based on dress code. So when we talk about what's appropriate, who gets to decide, who gets judged, policed, or left out, that's going to be the subject of this discussion. And we have two great guests who know a lot about fashion, who know a lot about culture and the changing norms of class and etiquette. And so we'd love to hear from you because people have differing views about how we are today in America when it comes to fashion and it comes to dress. So our question of the day is, have we gotten too casual when it comes to fashion? And when you say too casual, what do you mean? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our YouTubers and streamers on Facebook, you can put your comments in the chat.
That was a really strong intro.
I tried.
That was great.
Thank you.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
What was the bonnet reference? I think a bonnet must be something other than what I think it is.
Yeah, no, people wear hair bonnets.
Uh-huh.
Like, I wear a hair bonnet at night. Okay.
Okay.
To protect
See,
my hair.
I thought
hair.
a bonnet was a fancy hat.
No, it's a hair bonnet. They call bonnets, and you wear people wear them
so
to protect their
than
hair
an
at
Easter
night.
Bonnet.
Yeah, people wear them at night. They're satin silk bonnets. They wear them at night.
Got
a
it.
Lot of women wear them at night to protect their hair.
I have a lot to learn.
And
you
typically wear them at home to sleep in.
Got it.
But people, if you're wearing pajamas to the airport, you might keep your bonnet on because you're planning on sleeping on the plane.
I learned something.
There you go.
I'm going to learn a whole lot more this hour. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. Have we gotten too casual when it comes to fashion? Or maybe you just want to school me on some fashion terms? Go ahead. Give us a call.
Like but a hair bonnet.
Yeah. Sure. But first, a trio of local news stories. This one is so wild. I can't even believe this story, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So could you imagine getting arrested and tossed in jail because your employer lied to you about the legality of their own business? Well, that's allegedly what happened to four employees over the weekend at the former World Cafe Live concert venue in West Philadelphia. Backstory. World Cafe Live has had all sorts of issues over the past year since a new owner took the reins. There was labor strife. More recently, they declared bankruptcy. They actually changed their name to World Stage.
Oh.
Anyway, on Saturday, state liquor authorities raided the space because they were serving alcohol without a license. They arrested three bartenders and a manager, all four held overnight. The manager was not released until Monday. No charges against the bartenders in the end, but the manager is charged with liquor law violations. All of this according to the Philadelphia Inquirer. Now, the employees, before all this, they knew that the venue's liquor license had expired back in October. But a union rep told the Inquirer that management told employees that this issue had been resolved and that they could and should serve alcohol again. So at the very least, these bartenders were apparently under the impression that they weren't doing anything wrong. Then they get arrested and tossed in jail. I mean, what is going on, Cherry?
Yeah, to get arrested for doing what you think is your job is crazy. Like, I'm just like,
that's,
I would be livid.
Incensed.
I would be livid. And I don't know, you know, how you go back to the job after that. That would make me really nervous to go back. And according to the Inquirer, World Life Cafe they operated as a BYO for a couple months after they lost their liquor license. So it's like, why would you even risk it if you knew that you had a renewal license pending? That's according to the reporting. And that, you know, you had some issues with taxes you had to clear up first. But why would you risk it all? Because now,
why would you risk it? That's easy to answer.
Yeah, but I know. For the money.
The lie is money.
But, you know, at the same time, you know, They have bankruptcy issues. They have a lot of issues. You can't clear this up.
That's why they need money.
Risking it. And now folks are under arrest. By the way, the president of World Life Cafe, World Cafe Live, excuse me, did not respond to the inquirer's request for comment. So we really don't know their side of the story. But a lot of people
If this is what happened,
yeah.
My only question is, could you hold the people that told the bartenders to serve alcohol liable?
There will probably be some kind of a lawsuit.
Speaking of lawsuits, number two.
A federal appeals court ruled this week that New Jersey cannot regulate prediction markets like Kalshi that allow users to place bets on outcomes of everything from sports to politics to weather. And in what marks a first of its kind ruling on whether state gaming regulators can police the activities of these types of markets, the Third Circuit held that the U.S. Commodities Trade Commission has exclusive jurisdiction over the sports related contracts that Kalshi allows people to trade on its platforms. And the states, they have argued that prediction markets are operating without a required state license, which they claim violates state gaming laws, including bans that allowing bets from users under age. And they say that these sports predictions are basically the same as the bets that you can get on like FanDuel or DraftKings. And several states, including New Jersey, has sent out these cease and desist letters last year. And that prompted Kalshi to sue. And of course, they've said, look, you know, this is federal jurisdiction. Yeah. You guys don't have control over us.
And they make this distinction about how their markets operate versus traditional betting. And there are some distinctions, whether or not those distinctions are upheld or codified through the law. That's what's being, you know, hashed out in the courts.
But I mean, there's probably going to be appeal at some point from the attorney general from New Jersey. But there's multiple cases pending across the country and different venues. So this is the first. And we'll see if it goes to the U.S. Supreme Court.
And it's just so funny that it's all happening in New Jersey. It's a bit of a chickens irony. Coming home to roost moment, because New Jersey, if you'll recall, was the state that sued all the way up to the Supreme Court.
They opened the Pandora's box.
Exactly. The case that ended up creating widespread legalized sports gambling. And look, it's not like they were asking for Kalshi to come along, but when that New Jersey case was decided, it created this huge market for sports gambling. It made it mainstream. It allowed companies like Kalshi and Polymarket to ride that wave to find new customers, find customers at all. And so, yeah, it's just so funny that it's all happening in the state of New Jersey. They thought this is going to be a revenue stream for us, and it may turn out to be a revenue stream for someone else.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're not getting regulated, which means they're not paying the taxes. So,
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, let's end on a positive note. You want to do that?
Yes, I love positive.
We all love positive. Yeah.
Okay. So let's do it.
Let's do positive. So we got a powerful reminder last night that you need to listen to your mom, especially if she's a Jersey mom.
Go Jersey.
Jersey moms know best. Okay, so Michigan won the men's basketball championship last night, and their best player this season was a forward named Yaxel Lendeborg, who grew up just over the bridge in Pennsauken, South Jersey, but he barely played basketball in high school. So Lendeborg struggled academically at Pennsauken High School. He really wasn't very interested in basketball and ended up playing just 11 games for the varsity team at the very end of his senior year. So according to our news partner, 6ABC, after graduation, Lendeborg had a little heart-to-heart with his mom, Yiseleni, who took him to her job and said, "Do you want to work like me the rest of your life?" He said, "I don't think so, Mom." She said, "Give basketball a shot." And so Yaxel had one offer at a junior college in Arizona. He took it. He blossomed. He eventually transferred to a school in Alabama and then to Michigan. Now he's a national champ. And very soon, very likely, he's going to be making big bucks in the NBA, in the NBA, all thanks to his mom.
And I got to say this, mom was smart and she had good instincts for a reason. According to SB Nation, he had the genes to be very successful in basketball because both his mother and his father played for the Dominican Republic national basketball team. His mother also played for the country's volleyball team, and she played both sports when she got pregnant with him. So it was he was literally in utero.
Yeah, he was born to do it.
And she said, all you got to do is get focused.
Got to apply yourself.
You can do this thing. And as soon as he put the video game console down right. and got serious,
Yeah.
He, boom, blossomed. So he didn't just listen to his mom, but he got it from his mama too.
He got it from his mom too. That's a great point. And for context, this is so rare in basketball.
Basketball
is one of the sports where by the time someone turns like 15, 16, and they have NBA potential, you can usually tell, and they're usually a pretty accomplished like youth player. So basketball is a sport where you just don't see a lot of stories like this. And so it's a great story. It's crazy that he's this huge player now from our area and basically didn't play basketball.
It's because he got it from his mama. Hey.
Some people get their fashion sense from their mama or their papa. Or you're like me, you don't have one at all. And you don't know what to say for this transition.
We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrett. My mom's texting me how I need to listen to her more. Boy, that last segment really put me behind the eight ball. Anyways, reset. Picture this. You're planning a special night out with your partner. You book a nice steakhouse. You get dressed up. Maybe even splash on some cologne for the occasion.
Ooh, smelling good.
Then you walk in and you witness a sea of slobs in sports jerseys, hats, and sweatpants. Oh, the horror. That's why Ruth's Chris Steakhouse recently updated their dress code to mandate business casual.
Yeah, and it's not just restaurants. The pandemic upended rules at many offices. And at the airport, it feels like everyone's traveling in full nap mode. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy is encouraging air travelers to, quote, dress with respect, end quote, to restore civility and class to air travel. Let's hear a clip.
I think, again, I call this just maybe dressing with some respect. You know, whether it's a pair of jeans and a decent shirt, I would encourage people to maybe dress a little better, which encourages us to maybe behave all a little better. Let's try not to wear slippers and pajamas as we come to the airport.
You heard that. And this all has us wondering, have we lost the plot when it comes to style? And when did athleisure become acceptable for a night out? And who gets to decide what is acceptable in a dress code and what is not?
Here to discuss those questions and many more, a pair of experts. First, let me introduce Vanessa Friedman, the fashion director and chief fashion critic for the New York Times. Vanessa, thanks for being here on Studio 2.
Yes. Nice to see you guys.
And also with us in studio, we have Ali Howell-Obolo, associate professor and program director of fashion design at Drexel University's Antoinette Westfall College of Media Arts and Design. Ali, thanks for being here.
Hi. Nice to be here with you both today.
And for our listeners, whether you listen in sweatpants or a three-piece suit, our question of the day for you is this. Have we gotten too casual when it comes to fashion? And when you say too casual, we want you to explain. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our streamers on YouTube or Facebook, you can drop your comments in the chat.
Nichelle says other countries are even more lax. What's the issue? Okay. Interesting supposition there by Nichelle. Maybe we'll get to that later. Standards around the world. But let's start in America. Vanessa, looking back through American history, do you think there's an era when fashion formality peaked in this country?
The Gilded Age?
The Gilded Age. Okay. Taking us all the way back. Yeah, well, I was thinking like Mad Men or something. I don't know.
Everybody dressed up. Yeah.
I mean, I think if you're talking about, you're really talking about dress codes, right?
Yeah.
Like different ways that we codify class, work, profession, whatever. And those have existed, you know, for centuries. And we've just started to get rid of them recently. But I think the erosion really began happening probably in the late 90s with Casual Fridays.
Okay, so Casual Fridays was a tipping point. Explain how.
Well, it gave the individual permission to dress theoretically according to their own taste, right? As opposed to according to the code of the workplace. Before that, you're sort of talking about the balance of power between the institution and the individual. And for most of our professional memories, I guess, if you want to call it that, the institution took precedence, right? So you dressed according to your job, right? You dressed according to the mores and the unspoken or spoken codes of your job. So you wore, you know, you were a man in a gray flannel suit. You wore a tie. You wore dress shoes. You wore a hat. You wore a certain kind of overcoat. If you were a woman, you know, probably wore stockings and heels and gloves, possibly. And gradually, the idea that you should kind of subsume your own taste to the tastes or the dictates of your workplace began to change.
Mm, yeah.
And then that gave us Casual Friday, where you were free to be yourself.
Yeah. And a quick follow up to you, Vanessa. I mean, what was the purpose, the original purpose of these dress codes? And, you know, I went to Catholic school, so we had a dress code. You had to wear certain uniforms and only certain sweaters, and your socks had to be this way, and your dress, your skirt could only be this high from your knee. What was the purpose of all of this? And what sort of was the one of the many reasons to sort of break that down?
I mean, codes serve a number of purposes, right? There's propriety, right? Certainly when you're talking about schools, it's like making sure that kids look appropriate. There is equality, right? If everyone's wearing the same thing, they seem to be coming from the same place. There's community, right? Which is you show your allegiance to a group by how you dress. And sometimes that's like your allegiance to a workplace group. Sometimes it's your allegiance to an activist group. Right? It depends what you're, how you're looking. And the reason you want to break it down is that, you know, these same strictures that kind of make it easier to get up in the morning and put your clothes on also become barriers, right? And then you want to rebel against them.
Yeah. And so Allie, want to bring you into the conversation because, you know, what are some of the reasons why people, because I know that there have been dress codes have been used to keep people out, just as it has been to bring people in and create equality. Can you talk about some of that that history as we try to lay the foundation for our conversation?
Sure. I think dress codes, like in a professional workplace, they can create propriety and equality, but I also think they can suppress identity in a lot of ways. And so if someone doesn't feel free to show their true self at work, are they going to do their best work is the question that I would ask. And so while we might be creating consistency or a consistent look in a workplace, we might not also be getting the best work out of people if they're not comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Let me bring in a caller. Here's Karen from Overbrook on the line. Our question today is whether you think things have gotten a little too casual, mm-hmm. fashion-wise in this country. 888-477-9499, the email studio2@whyy.org. Karen, you're up first today. What is your perspective on this conversation?
Yeah, the dress code really got really too casual. And I remember just growing up in the workforce that back in the 80s and 90s that you had to wear, you know, stockings and closed shoes. And I do believe when you do dress professional, people treat you differently. They treat you with respect. And I believe that should come back. And as I walk down in downtown with my suits or just a nice dress or just slacks, something nice and something, you know, not tidy, even if it's the same thing, I get a little bit more respect. So I believe, yeah.
Why do you think people are dressing down then if they're getting less respect when they dress down, Karen?
I believe because it just seems as though it's too casual. It's like you're not taken seriously. You're doing active work and mm-hmm. but you're at work. I believe that it's a status.
Hmm.
Even if you're not have a high status.
Yeah. Thanks, Karen. A lot of folks chiming in with similar sentiments. Maura, I like this one. Maura says, if I see one more person show up to a wedding or a funeral in jeans, I'm going to scream. When you dress better, you just feel better. So Maura saying you dress better, you feel better. Karen saying you dress better, people give you more respect, which makes me wonder why over the last, Vanessa, you identified this as about the 90s, why people then have gone the other way? Like what is it about society that you think has elevated the fashion preferences of the individual over this sort of collective fashion sense that may be ruled before.
I think it's what we were talking about earlier. It's this idea that, you know, as an individual, you should bring your true self and your own identity to whatever context you are in, right? You shouldn't have to subsume yourself to this greater group identity, which may feel inauthentic and unfair to you, unnatural to you. And, you know, then you layer in things like, you know, the rise of the tech world, right? Where all these kids suddenly arrived and moved fast and broke everything and changed, you know, changed all of our lives and did it in hoodies and sweatpants. Cause they were like, well, why should we play by your rules? Your rules are clearly wrong, right? Your ideas are old. This is the new world.
So it's a sense of rebellion by breaking the old rules.
Rebellion, individuality, the future, right? Change.
Yeah. But why would those ideas be surfacing, I don't know, in the 90s, early 2000s, more than any other time? Because, you know, some people might be thinking back to the 60s and 70s and thinking, boy, that was a time of rebellion. That was a time of great change. Like, why didn't the dam break back then? Like, why do you think in the late 90s, early 2000s, or whatever time period you think it is, there was something in society that elevated those ideas so much?
Well, certainly it did start, you know, much earlier. It just kind of was absorbed, probably, into the workforce or codified in a way when we got Casual Friday.
Yeah. And by the way, our question of the day is, have we gotten too casual when it comes to fashion? And you can tell us why you feel yes or no. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our streamers on YouTube or Facebook, you can keep those comments coming in the chat. We have someone, Mark, from New Jersey on the line. Mark, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
I'm just curious about the trends. These are trends towards the lazy trends that we have that are manifesting on social media. I think that's become apparent in just daily life, because there was a time, I grew up in the 90s and 2000s, and we had to wear shoes to get into the club. You know, nowadays that's overdressed by a lot. Like unless you work in like in the downtown Manhattan or somewhere, everybody's dressed up. But it's a different thing now. People don't put as much time and energy into, you know, their appearance as they used to. If they do, it's to look lazy intentionally.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mark from New Jersey. You want to react to that, Allie? I mean, just the idea that people just don't want to put the effort in to even trying to look good. Or maybe they're intentionally trying to be, you know, to not.
Yeah, I don't know if it's intentional or not intentional, but I think we also see a lot more of each other's lives all the time now on social media. Connecting what to Vanessa said, the tech world that kind of changed the dress code, the social media element of this changed how much we see of our own lives, of each other's lives, and of lives of people that we want to emulate, of celebrities, so we can see them in their casual wear and behind the scenes. And that helps us also as a society and individuals feel it's okay to also be more casual as well. And I think these rules obviously apply differently to different groups, right?
And I wanted to ask you about that, because I do wonder if there is a gender difference, because when we had our caller earlier talking about, you know, walking down the street, you felt like you had to dress in a certain kind of way to be taken seriously. I wonder, I came out of law school, young lawyer, and I was schooled by mentors to dress better because I wanted to be taken seriously. Do you feel like it's a difference with gender, that maybe because a lot of the folks coming from the tech world were men, right? They can be taken seriously, and maybe it's a difference in gender with women. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it could be gender-based, but I think it's identity, like, broadly, because we are, as a society, willing to accept casual clothes, as an example, in certain bodies and not others. Mm-hmm. The same way with these dress codes, they're enforcing rules. And I'm thinking more about school dress codes rather than, like, corporate business dress codes, where the rules are often enforced more strictly towards young women and girls than they are to male students, or to students of color more than white students.
Yeah. And any comments on that, Vanessa? Are there any gender or ethnic identity, you think, differences that that exist when we talk about, you know, dress codes and going super casual?
I mean, I think there are myriad differences that exist. You know, some are gender, some are ethnic, some are contextual, right? Some depends what job you're doing. Because we all bring all these expectations of each other to how we perceive each other and how, you know, whether we decide someone is being too casual. You know, this is one of the big problems with contemporary dress codes where, you know, workplaces, because they are so scared of being seen as dictating to people, they are dictating to employees. They will say, well, we ask you to dress appropriately, right? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Like my appropriate is not necessarily Allie's appropriate. It's not necessarily your appropriate, right? Like appropriate is entirely in the eye and mind of the beholder and the wearer. And that leads to all sorts of confusion, you know, which
people don't know what to wear, what's appropriate, what's inappropriate. Yeah.
I mean, I remember, you know, like with Casual Friday, it was very funny because men, you know, who supposed, this is particularly men, you know, supposedly had all this freedom would end up dressing in exactly the same way. As each other every Friday. So it was like too much choice.
The khaki polo combo was like the corporate uniform because people didn't know what to wear. So you wore khakis. A lot of the men wore khakis and a little polo every single day.
I could have helped them out. I don't have any of that stuff. Here's another caller, Ken from Yardley on line 3. Hey, Ken, you're on Studio 2. What's your insight on this fashion conversation this hour?
Well, I'm kind of proud of myself because as I'm sitting here listening, I'm changing my mind. I'm not defending a stance I took 5 minutes ago. But my original comment was a friend told me to dress differently to meet more ladies as I was growing up. You know, I had the dream I'll settle down someday. And I said, but I'll be feeding into this whole there's a right and wrong thing. I will be reinforcing the false idea. But now I'm seeing it more as, I show up for something, should I show more interest in me as an individual or I'm part of this group? Mm. There's a time to be part of the group.
Mm. Wow, Ken is being actively convinced by the show.
Look at Ken!
Is an individual, but he's also a member of a team, or she.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Ken from Yardley.
That was an interesting call.
Show up for something. I bought a suit for a wedding. Not to show off my identity. It was, I want to show that I put effort into being in this group.
Right.
I'm meeting someone else's needs, not my own.
Fair point. Thank you, Ken from Yardley. Let's bring in another caller. Andrew from Schwanksville is on line 6. Hey, Andrew, you're on Studio 2. What's your comment or question?
My comment was just, you know, talking about the changes in, you know, the mentality of people. You know, going out, showing up to places, you know, it like, you know, going back to the other caller, you know, was talking about, you know, where were these people in the 80s and then in the 90s it changed. You know, there was a lot of them, but, you know, they weren't engaging in the corporate world, you know, in that sense. And, you know, the job structures were different. You know, you couldn't get a job and, you know, go show up to work every day, you know, in sweatpants and such like that. But then, you know, the 90s happened, you know, and then COVID, you know, and people working from home. And even people coming in for interviews, you know, you got to get a lot of like, you know, that's what you're wearing. Like you're coming to this job, like, and that's what you're presenting yourself as, because that's just how they've, you know, presented themselves in the last, you know, 2-3 years,
right?
Not dealing with people. And I think the lack of the intrapersonal relations, you know, person to person, everything's online now. You don't specifically always see what people are looking like. And then that transfers to people going out the house. You know, they carry themselves in the same way. You know?
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew. So on this COVID point, interesting one from Andrew. Allie, how did COVID change fashion?
Well, it gave us all permission to work more casually, but we also have to kind of consider that there's a generation of employees that started work during COVID, right? So they started working online. So as we transition to more in-person jobs, then they're carrying that casualness with them. And it may be just relearning some of these skills about how to, and I really hesitate to use this word, but to dress professionally, because I think that can carry a
And
lot
and
of
I
meaning.
Think about that because when I remember first coming out of school, like people had to tell me, like I didn't know. Yeah. And I think I wore things to a law firm that I probably wouldn't now, knowing what I know. But there's not that, people don't necessarily get taught that, right? I mean, that's something you have to, people don't wake up and come into the workforce knowing what is right and what is not, or what is, quote, appropriate, like Vanessa talked about. Is that correct?
I think so in a lot of work today. I mean, this is certainly not my area of expertise, but I would say that we have a lot more access to a lot more information about fashion. And so there's more variety, there's more to choose from. And what I was maybe socialized to think of as appropriate and professional might be different from other people. And so I think it's the environment in which you work. Obviously, if you're working in like a fashion home office, you're going to dress differently than if you're a corporate lawyer versus if you are a bank teller, for example. Those are probably financial. All require different types of dress codes.
Yeah. Jim says, echoing what our last caller said, Jim says, I think the real turning point was the pandemic for all the obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. And secondarily, an economy that spirals the workforce down into near poverty. So maybe sloppy is just kind of a response to that. But who's to say all this is sloppy, Vanessa? Like, I mean, this is all very arbitrary sounding to me. This particular garment is formal. This particular garment is sloppy or evidence of decline. Like, help me wade through that. Like, who decides what's sloppy? And do you think casual is fairly equated with sloppy?
I think flip-flops, most people would probably agree, is casual.
Yeah.
I think when it's like flopping around under your foot, you know. You know, jeans, certainly there are fancy jeans and there are casual jeans, right? And there are jeans that are, there are jeans that are purposely ripped and beaded and they are fancy jeans, and there are jeans that are ripped and they are not fancy jeans. So it is increasingly hard to define. I think there's a certain care that often marks clothes that we consider professional or appropriate, right? Things where you don't have stains on them and they aren't, like, the hems aren't coming down and, you know, things aren't mistakenly exposed that probably weren't meant to be exposed.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's things like that more than an actual garment probably that now, you know, denote whether something is considered casual or not casual. Casual tends to mean you can like slob around in it.
Yeah. And I want to throw in here because Mary G 5171 on YouTube says my granddaughter had the cutest leggings on. She said the leggings were $125 and the crop top was $100. So I just want to point out that was expensive for some casual wear, because if you think about it, casual doesn't necessarily mean cheap.
No,
because there's a lot of very expensive, high end casual wear. So can we talk about that? And when you wear something expensive, it's intentional and you want to wear it wherever you want to wear it, Allie.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the rise of the athleisure market has kind of changed our relationship to that type of clothing. Like, you can go and you can buy Aloe set, you know, for $100 for leggings and $125 for a top, maybe more actually. But it goes back to the question, like, if you're going to wear that in a professional setting, who is that going to be acceptable for? That would be my question to the audience, is who would that be acceptable for? Is it not casual because it's expensive, or is it not casual because of the body that is wearing it?
Interesting. And I guess if you work in certain kind of settings, that could be the perfect outfit. Yeah. If you work in fitness or something like that. Yeah.
Well, we have a lot more to get to, a lot more callers, a lot more comments.
A lot of comments here today.
Our question for today, have we gotten too casual when it comes to fashion? Call 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're streaming on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat about my shirt. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. This hour, we're talking about dress codes and attitudes. Fashion designer Karl Lagerfeld once said, sweatpants are a sign of defeat. You lost control of your life, so you bought some sweatpants.
End Thanks, quote. Carl. With us this hour, debating that and other fashion rules, we have Vanessa Friedman, fashion director and chief fashion critic at the New York Times, and Ali Howell Abolo, associate professor and program director of fashion design at Drexel University's Antoinette Westphal College of Media Arts and Design. We're asking you this hour, have we gotten too casual when it comes to fashion? Give us a call, 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org, YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
Want to bring in a couple callers back to back. Let's see. Let's first hear from Steve from Reading, who's on the line. Steve, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, hi. It's really a short two-part. The first is I grew up really poor, so I didn't have nice clothes ever. And in school, I got picked on, teased, whatever, because of it. But in church, they were really welcoming and never had a problem with that. As I've grown up, I've been a pastor for over 40 years. I've worked really hard to dismantle this idea that you have to dress up to go to church, because that really was a barrier for the haves and the have-nots. And I lived it, so I knew it was true. So that's just my comment. I mean, and I'm all about dressing up. When someone shows up at a wedding and or a funeral in pajamas or whatever it is, I think that's awful. On the other hand, some people can't afford stuff, and we always have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, thanks you so Steve. Much, Steve from
Good
Reading.
Call.
Yeah, great call. Catherine from University City is on the line. Catherine, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
My original comment was more so regarding the fact that when you want to make a first good impression at a meeting, or if you have to go somewhere important and you have to meet your associates at a restaurant, and you see people come in after you, not a part of your group, come in, but they're wearing blue jeans and they're wearing a t-shirt when the dress code clearly says not to. I mean, granted, I'm a bit more of an old soul. I wear a hat to church.
Okay.
I dress up to the nines when appropriate. But this is a little bit further back in the conversation that has been happening. But I'm also a student at Drexel for fashion design. So I always love when people dress up to the nines or to the appropriate style. And that was just, I just wanted to add in my own comment of first impressions with how you regard yourself in dressing and how others regard you are two different things. If you feel good in what you're wearing, but sometimes certain outfits may not be the best thing to wear, even though you might feel 100% you.
Thank you. Catherine from University City. Your thoughts, Vanessa, on the whole idea of first impressions. You know, has the standard changed for job interviews, for example? Or, you know, you may have casual wear at work, but do people still show up for the first meeting, for the first thing, a little bit leveled up?
I mean, if I was advising my kids, which I do, I would tell them to, you know, to play it safe. And that means really like play it a little bit traditionally when you're doing a first impression. But you definitely want to feel good about yourself, right? Mm-hmm. You want to feel confident in who you are, because that's what you're bringing to the job, right? You're like, here I am, here's my skill set, here's what I can bring to you. So if you're wearing something that makes you feel bad about yourself or makes you feel uncomfortable or makes you feel insecure, that's not going to be helpful, even if it is quote unquote appropriate according to, you know, an older definition of that term. I think you do want to be respectful of whoever you are meeting with, right? Because this is about a relationship, right? It's not just you like walking down the street. It's you selling yourself, I guess. And so, you know, in that sense, you know, looking neat is, you know, kind of basic bottom line, like start there. Probably not wearing something that you think might be misinterpreted, right? Like a flip flop, like a sweatpant, to Carl's point. That's a good idea.
I want to read in this comment from Dora in Langhorne. This one was really interesting to me. Dora asks, can your guest discuss trends in shoes? I work in corporate America, and while my male colleagues can find a pair of dressy Cole Haans with sneaker soles, the same doesn't quite exist for women. I feel like we haven't talked a lot about comfort, Allie, and like who can dress comfortable and still be counted as appropriate. Are there like gender differences there that you see?
I would say yes, most likely. I would first argue that everyone should dress comfortably if they want to.
Yeah.
But I think the conversation about sneakers in general is really interesting because sneakers have become so widely accepted as right. part of every element of, you know, mm-hmm. fashion. And you have
some of them cost like $1,000.
Yes, very expensive sneakers. You have brides and grooms that wear sneakers to their wedding.
Air Force One, the Air Force Ones now, they have a patent leather that yes. goes with tuxedos.
Yes. So
yeah,
we've wow. really become a sneaker-fied nation. But I would also offer that there are brands like Golden Goose and Balenciaga that are first two that are coming to mind that make sneakers that look purposefully destroyed. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, what does that tell us about what sneakers mean to people as well? I think that that's part of this conversation. It's sort of a class issue, connecting back to what your previous caller said. Like, why is it acceptable to pay $2,000 for a pair of sneakers that are already kind of pre-destroyed?
Yeah. During the break, one of the things we talked about, Allie, was sort of the changing norms around hair. I think about when I first graduated school earlier in the 2000s, and, you know, you had to wear your hair straight. It had to be a certain kind of way. Mm-hmm. And now we have Crown Acts passed in states across the country. Can you talk about just sort of how the changing norms, even how you present, women don't have to have full faces of makeup anymore. Like, a lot has sort of shifted as far as like personal appearance at the workplace and what is accepted.
Yeah, I think the Crown Act is a great example of because it's one, it's telling us that we have to have a law that says people can wear their hair in a particular way, which is maybe telling about our society. But I also think it's a great step in the right direction in terms of acceptance about what we can mm-hmm. have in schools and workplaces and society in general that allows people to express who they are and really let their identity show through. And for a lot of people, that does come through the hairstyles that they choose to wear, whether it's a natural hairstyle or it's braids or it's, you know, like a silk press. These are choices that people now can be more free to make.
Mm. Yeah.
Let me bring in a caller. Mm-hmm. This is Paul from Alabama.
What?
All right, Paul. I don't even know what's going on in Alabama. I feel like we got to check in first or something. I'm just kidding. What's your comment here, Paul?
Well, I grew up in Philadelphia, and so no matter where I am, I always stream my WHYY.
All right.
Thank you, Paul, from Alabama.
And send us some hot sauce while you're at it. Go ahead.
I'll tell you why I'm calling, because as I listen to this conversation, I think it's fascinating that, and the way I could try to sum this up is that for Western society in general, there have been a few traits that have changed over the last 20 or 30 years that I believe in their combination have contributed to this discussion that we are having right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's been an increase in personal pride, as in like the way I feel is most important and what I want to do is most important. So that has been trending upward over the last 15, 20, 30 years, combined with a lessening in humility, a willingness to submit to another person's standard or perhaps society in general. So as humility has kind of declined in our Western societies with an increase of personal pride, the net result is I'm pretty much going to wear what I want if I feel it's appropriate, and I don't much have a concern for what you think.
Yeah. The rise of individualism. That's what you're talking about. Individual versus the whole. I like that call from Paul in Alabama. I kind of think it was echoing what you were getting at earlier, Vanessa, right? I mean, this is that kind of where this all flows from in your mind? A general trend toward elevating the individual and perhaps, you know, muting the impact on the whole.
Yeah, I mean, it's what I was calling the individual versus the institution, right? Or the established.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let me bring in another comment here. I like this one from Jayla, who says, it is my belief the casualization of dressing is due to the emulation of the wealthy and leisure class. Mm. It's saying, quote, I got it like that, and quote, I am so wealthy I don't need to look professional. I don't have to work. And if I work, I dress however I feel like it. Okay, so that's like the opposite power dynamic of what a lot of people might assume, Allie, which is that you dress when you dress up, you're dressing aspirationally. J-Law's like flipping this on its head. Do you think J-Law has a point here?
Yeah, but I think it's like part of culture, right? We elevate certain brands, certain styles, and that becomes what we aspirational, what we want to emulate. And so if you see your favorite influencer, your favorite celebrity wearing sweatpants or yoga pants or whatever the case may be, that's a signal to you that that's okay to do mm-hmm. that. And I think that's definitely part of this change in our society about who's wearing what, where, and why.
Yeah, let's bring in another caller. We have Meredith from Burlington, New Jersey on the line. Meredith, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hello. I was in the workforce in the late 80s, early 90s. I guess that's when I entered the workforce. And Casual Friday was starting to come out, and then things got more and more casual. I've always had the feeling that it was a strategy for businesses to keep their employees happy without having to pay them more.
That's probably
Meredith from Burlington, New Jersey. Yeah, people like those little perks, being able to fully express themselves at work makes it kind of cool. Kevin says dress codes can be liberating. They can alleviate the burden on individuals to express themselves through fashion. People may feel more burdened by having to maintain a cool or expressive wardrobe or to keep up with coworkers and trends in the absence of dress codes. Matt says, ask your guests about Zuckerberg wearing the same outfit every day. Like, and I've read about this, and I have like 5 or 6 black turtlenecks just because
Steve
if
Jones?
I don't know what I want to do, I'm overwhelmed. Guess what you're going to see me in?
A black turtleneck.
Like, I don't want to choose.
But wasn't that the Steve Jobs thing? He was always wearing like a turtleneck.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people who believe that, you know, less decisions, you can just wear the same
optimize
outfit.
Optimize your life, right?
Optimize your life. And so, you know, just to sort of like, you know, you brought this up earlier, Vanessa, sort of leveling the playing field by having dress codes. Your thoughts on the politics of this, though, because we have a talk about this now with the Trump administration. They're formalizing the dress code in the State Department now. You know, for all official events, you hear the transportation secretary asking people to dress up. Are dress codes becoming political in some ways?
Dress codes have always been political. You know, I think dress codes are by definition political, right? Sometimes they're overtly political because you've got a politician talking about them. But, you know, they apply to the politics of our everyday lives. And when we rebel against them, we're often rebelling against a political system that we're subject to. You know, but Washington, I would say, is probably the last bastion of the tie and suit. And that has been true even without an official dress code. I mean, I don't really know if you remember, but there was at one point a big kerfuffle like 2 years ago because they were abolishing a dress code that actually had not existed on the Senate floor, saying that you could go, you know, you could appear for votes not in a suit and tie. It turned out there had never actually been a written dictate that you had to wear a suit and tie. But everyone got so freaked out and thought this was, you know, the end of propriety in Washington that they then ended up codifying the ruling that you did have to wear a suit and tie.
Wow. But is there something to be said for a suit and tie? Are there, you know, like you want your, I mean, we have a senator from Pennsylvania who doesn't really like wearing a suit and tie. I just wonder.
Oh, yeah. He came up in the comments.
Yeah. Oh, he did.
Oh, he's down there.
The shorts,
it's down there at the bottom. Yep.
Yeah. I didn't scroll down. We got a bunch of comments here. Excuse me to Al, our engineer, for that. But I just wonder, you know, is there some pro for having a formal attire? Vanessa?
I mean, you know, I certainly feel like if I get up in the morning and I take off my slippers and I put on my shoes, that is like a mental signal to myself that I am now starting to work. And that was true even when I worked at home. You know, it's true when I'm going to work. So clothes play a role in how you feel psychologically. They play a role in how you present to the world. They are full of embedded signals to the rest of the world about who you are and your value system. And so, you know, certainly I think when it comes to our politicians, we, the electorate, you know, want them to look a certain way, right? We want them to adhere to a certain amount of tradition, right? Government is in large ways about continuity. Mm. And so we want the people involved in it to represent continuity.
Mm. Well, that's interesting. Hadn't thought of it that way before. Mm-hmm. I think we can squeeze in one more comment here. Olivia says, can you please comment on the body positivity movement and how it's affected fashion? It's great for people to feel good, but my God, there is just so much skin. Okay, can I just give that to you, Allie, as we wrap up? I don't really know what to do with that, but I think a lot of people are curious how the body positivity movement has impacted fashion and the way we see this whole propriety conversation.
Yeah, I think like everything else, it's great to embrace every individual identity, and that includes, well, you know, fat fashion or plus size fashion, and not allowing, but society kind of accepting that bodies come in all shapes and sizes. And that's true for the individual, but I also think it's really important that we see that in our advertisements, that body diversity and this body positive movement are reflected back to us so that, you know, we all can feel comfortable in our skin.
Mm. Well, I want to thank you both for a really interesting conversation this hour. You just heard Allie Howell-Obolo, Associate Professor and Program Director of Fashion Design at Drexel University's Antoinette Westfall College of Media Arts and Design. Allie, thank you for your time today on Studio 2. And thank you, Vanessa Friedman, Fashion Director and Chief Fashion Critic at the New York Times. Vanessa, appreciate the time today.
You guys.
And by the way, I just want to say that Lagerfeld has put sweatpants on the runway. So, there you go. Anyway, thank you so much to Glenn,
sweatpants come for
Talia,
all of us, Carl,
Megan, and Joe for your calls today. And of course, thank you for our producers. Thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel May Bryan. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We'll talk to you tomorrow.